This is Jordan Seculo. Today on Jay Seculo Live, the Supreme Court of the United States gives the Trump administration a big win on immigration enforcement.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Seculo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
Welcome to Jay Seculo Live. This is Jordan Seculo. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. We have not been able to get to it this week, but the Supreme Court has delivered a major victory on immigration, and this is immigration security, to the Trump administration, to President Trump, specifically the Supreme Court on Tuesday. It was a 5-4, surprise, surprise, decision, endorsed the U.S. government's authority to detain immigrants awaiting deportation anytime, potentially even years, after they have completed prison terms for criminal convictions. So what that means, if they were convicted criminals and illegal immigrants, and then they serve their prison time in the U.S., and then they're to be deported. Now, there was a previous challenge saying, well, if I've served my criminal time and you don't know where you're going to deport me yet or what country is going to accept me now that I've been charged with these crimes, convicted of these crimes, and served my time, you should just let me out in the streets in the U.S. I mean, that's what these plaintiffs were arguing here against, and they were individuals who filed lawsuits against the Trump administration to just let us out in the streets. And what the Supreme Court said is, no, you are here illegally. So once you've committed a separate crime, once you have served your time for that crime, you can then be detained by ICE until your deportation, for however long that deportation takes. I want to go to Than Bennett in Washington, D.C., because Than, to me, this underscores, again, the seriousness of the border security issue and some of the bad policies that were in place. The fact that the Trump administration is having to fight this out all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court is pretty shocking.
Yeah, really horrific policies, Jordan. I mean, look, the president had said that he was going to focus his deportation on convicted criminals. And in order to do that, you first have to be able to detain those criminals, Jordan. And, you know, that is something that I think most Americans would look at as just simple common sense, that if a person is illegally present in the country and they have been convicted of a crime, of course you would be able to detain that illegal until a deportation proceeding would be able to be finished. But, Jordan, again, this comes back to what the president has repeatedly said, that even when a guideline or a law or a statute or a regulation makes perfect common sense and is consistent with the law, they have run into trouble at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. That was, again, the case in this situation. This is a big victory, Jordan, the Supreme Court overturning the Ninth Circuit. And frankly, it tees up what the president has been talking about over the last couple of weeks as well, how the Ninth Circuit really does need to be a focus to fill the vacancies on the court. Of course, he's already put three judges on the Ninth Circuit. There are four that are pending, some of them ready for votes on the floor of the Senate, Jordan. But for today, the Supreme Court has righted yet another wrong out of the Ninth Circuit, and this will facilitate the president's focus on first deporting those who are legally present who have already committed crimes in this country.
That's even if you came here legally. So if you had a visa to be here legally, but you committed a crime that subjected you to ultimately deportation. So some of the plaintiffs here came to the country legally, but have had their visas or their status revoked because of the crimes they have been convicted of. And we know that there's a backlog in deportation. So what this is saying is that you can then be removed from the prison to then ICE detention until you are ultimately deported back to your country of origin. And there's always discussions about whether those countries of origins want to accept those individuals. Guess what, though? 5-4 decision. Justice Alito writing for the majority. 5-4 on ideological grounds. If it was the other way, these criminals would just be let out into the streets who've broken their visas, who should be deported, and they'd be let out into the streets after serving their terms. Give us a call. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. It's a matching challenge month. This March, so important to the ACLJ. Whatever you donate is doubled at ACLJ.org. Make your donation online today at ACLJ.org and double the impact of your donation. That's ACLJ.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
We just talked about this big Supreme Court victory for President Trump and the Trump administration on Tuesday evening. The court ruled 5-4 along completely ideological lines. So, I mean, you're one vote away from this going the other way, that federal authorities like ICE could place immigrants into indefinite detention anytime without the possibility of bail after they finish their prison sentences. These are immigrants who either came here legally or illegally, who filed this challenge, who then committed crimes. Those crimes they were convicted of, because they were convicted of those crimes, they lose their right to be here. Those who were here legally lose their rights to be here. So then they should be deported. So after they serve their prison sentence in the United States, the question was, do they get just released out onto the streets, or can ICE detain those individuals while they go through the deportation process because they have lost the legal right to be in the U.S.? Seems like a pretty easy answer, right? You'd say, yes, ICE would detain these individuals after their prison sentence and handle their deportation because they do not have a right any longer to be in the U.S. They abused their visa by committing a crime, and now they've served the prison sentence for that crime. But part of that is also, the second part of that is losing your visa, being here now illegally, subject to deportation. But 5-4 at the Supreme Court. This is at a time when major Democrats are calling for ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to be eliminated. I mean, Than, we have seen this in Washington, D.C., and I want to take calls on this. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. How dangerous it would be to eliminate Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, ICE. But Than, it's become commonplace in Democrats' talking points in Washington, D.C., to say we need to eliminate ICE or totally reform ICE or redo ICE.
Yeah, I would say not even just commonplace, Jordan. I think it has become expected and required if you want to run for high office inside the Democrat Party that that is the position you have to take. Look, they just don't want these laws enforced, Jordan. We had a conversation in the break about how this ruling would also apply to those who are illegally present, even if they originally came legally. And let me just extrapolate on this for just a minute, because people need to understand this, Jordan. If someone is here legally and commits a crime, serves a prison sentence for it, and then has been released, and then at some some point, their reason for being legally present expires. Maybe they overstay a visa. Maybe there's some other factor. Jordan, ICE has to have the ability to then detain that person as they look to deport them. But look, a couple of things have happened. Maybe that expiration date happened after they were out of prison. Or here's the big one, Jordan. What if the presidential priorities, the priorities of the administration changed during that time? What if the person was released during the Obama administration? Then President Trump comes in and says, look, I'm going to enforce this law. I'm going to focus on those who are illegally present and who have committed crimes. Jordan, they would not be able to reach that person that was released during the Obama administration unless this ruling came down correct as it did yesterday. The Ninth Circuit got it wrong. The Supreme Court corrected it, and that will allow President Trump and ICE under his direction to pursue those people who are illegally present but were released during the past administration.
Give us a call. Talk to us on the air, 1-800-684-3110. As a reminder, this is not the first Trump administration victory at the Supreme Court in regards to immigration. They've had to fight all the way to the Supreme Court. But remember, there in another victory on immigration, conservative justices were in the majority, 5-4 again, when the Supreme Court ultimately, after the lower courts were holding it unconstitutional and putting injunctions in place, voted 5-4 to allow the what is known as the travel ban. That was held to be constitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court. That was another huge victory we were involved in with the Trump administration fighting for the constitutionality of that travel ban. Another huge immigration victory. And that follows a February 2018 ruling in a similar case with conservative majority over the liberal justices of the court that curbed the ability of immigrants held in long-term detention during deportation proceedings to argue for release. This idea that if you are in detention facilities to be deported, that you can make an argument for release should be pretty absurd, Than. It's like if you're in prison and you're not up for parole yet, and you're saying, oh, it's my turn to argue for release. Let me back out on the streets. I'm a criminal, but I want to argue that I'm out for release. The same thing. I think Than may have missed that. Let's get to the phones. 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Larry in Indiana on line one. Larry, welcome to Jay Secchio Live.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I don't see that this decision is going to put the lid back on the can of worms because, first we have to look at, and then this is a question to you, the number of people affected by this overall, the ability of ICE to detain those individuals, to find them, and concerning the back past the administration, a lot of these individuals, I would assume at this point, are going to have spouses and or children, and then that can of worms still stays open.
Well, I'd say, listen, these are those, though, that are scheduled to be deported. So those issues have been figured out. They are on the path. They have lost their visa. They have lost their legal right to be here. So they don't have any other kind of options to use the family, to use other connections. They may have used that to get their initial visa to immigrate here legally, but you can lose that right to be here, by violating our laws. And one of those laws is if you're convicted of a crime, and if you're convicted of certain crimes, you are then your visa is revoked. You must serve first your prison sentence. You're be punished here for that crime that you committed in the U.S. And then, because you have lost your legal right to be here, your visa has been revoked because you've committed a crime. You know, we give visas out. You have to be law-abiding while you have that visa. After you've done your prison sentence, it's then time for you to be deported. So you should go from the custody of the prison to the custody of ICE so that they can handle the deportation. Now, I know there's a backlog. I know it becomes difficult. But the truth is, that's why they need more resources at ICE. They need more resources at the Department of Homeland Security. But these are cases that are pretty cut and dry. You've got a visa. You lose the visa because you have been convicted of a crime. You have served time in prison because of that crime that you've been convicted of. So your visa is null and void. So when you're finished completing your prison term and are released from prison for that crime, you have no legal right to be in the U.S. And yet the ACLU attorney who argued this on behalf said that this Supreme Court has endorsed the most extreme interpretation of an immigration detention statutes allowing mass incarceration of people without any hearing. They've already been convicted of a crime separate from their entry crime. They've lost their right to be here. They must be deported. So, of course, it's the ACLU pushing back on this, but give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I just think, again, it shows these cases can be very difficult. I think we can even point to the national emergency case, cases that will end up at the U.S. Supreme Court. And ultimately in those cases, I think the Supreme Court will do the right thing. It may be on the slimmest of margins. So you've got the Trump administration has had to battle and battle through the Department of Justice and through groups like ours filing amicus briefs, battle and battle for this, the travel ban, immigration issues like this, and ICE having the ability to enforce the laws that are on the books. The newest issue with the National Emergency Declaration, we can take your calls about that as well. I mean, the idea that we kind of go into this, and the president even says going into it, he knows it's going to be a long legal battle, and unfortunately, they'll probably file in the Ninth Circuit. By the way, the case that came out of the Supreme Court Tuesday was out of the Ninth Circuit, who said you should release these convicted criminals who have lost their right to be in the U.S. They've lost their visa, that you should just release them and not put them in deportation facilities, not turn them over to ICE. So the Ninth Circuit was overturned, and this president has said, again, you know, we're going to have to fight the next one, the national emergency out, likely all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. You hope it doesn't have to be that way, but you have to assume that under this kind of partisan, partisan mood in Washington, D.C., that things that they can't get done legislatively that they don't like that the president is doing, they have to challenge every step of the way, or the constitutional powers of the president, they want to challenge every step of the way. And it's because I assert, not because he is a Republican, but because he is Donald Trump and he scares them for the next election cycle in 2020, because he is bigger than just being a Republican candidate. He is popular in the Midwest. He is popular in states Republicans. He won states Republicans had not won in decades, had not even been very competitive in decades. They're scared, and so they don't want any they don't want to give him any victories whatsoever. Can we go back to Than? Try about, yeah. I mean, Than, I think that's the bigger overall strategy, is fight the president on everything.
Yeah, fight him on everything and do it in a strategic location where you think you have a chance to win. I mean, I'm glad you brought up the travel ban and the national emergency, because the president is correct, Jordan. The playbook from the left is very clear. File in the Ninth Circuit and you will win, at least until you get to the Supreme Court, where ultimately I think the Supreme Court will do the right thing. And I would just say, we can get into this more, Jordan, but there's a way to shore up the Ninth Circuit. I mean, there are four nominees from President Trump pending to take a seat on the Ninth Circuit, and then some of these results probably would not go the wrong way. Jordan, the United States Senate, they need to confirm those four nominees and do it quickly.
Folks, we have got a lot to talk about, a lot of phone calls to get to at 1-800-684-3110. An update, too, on Pastor Youssef Nader Khani. You may remember he was on death row. We got him off death row, but he's been re-sentenced in Iran. We'll talk about that. Be part of our matching challenge, ACLJ.org. Go there now, donate, and the impact of your donation.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
We are going to get back to the immigration decision out of the Supreme Court, a big victory for the Trump administration. As we're getting your calls in, we got a lot of phone calls coming in. We're going through those right now to get those ready to take on the air. But I have to update you on a case which is so personal to all of us, the ACLJ, and to many of our listeners, especially our longtime listeners to the Jay Sekulow Live broadcast. You remember Pastor Youssef Nader Khani, an Iranian pastor. He was arrested in 2009, spent 1,064 days on death row in Iran for the crime of apostasy. He was then freed in 2012, rearrested on Christmas Day of 2012, and spent an additional 14 days in prison before being released again. I will tell you, this was one of our first large, at the ACLJ and using our international efforts, first large public advocacy cases for the release of a persecuted Christian who was in prison. And now you talk about the list, you know, whether it's Andrew Brunson, Asiya Bibi, you look at the in Sudan, Miriam Ibrahim. I mean, the list goes on and on of cases. We've got Pastor Saw's case going on right now. I mean, there is a many. If you go to BeHeardProject.org, there's so many there of the cases that we've worked on since. But this was the Saeed Abedini's case. Again, an American held imprisoned in Iran. But this was on death row. And we it was our first time really getting into this. And, we didn't know how it would work. It was exactly because it was an Iranian citizen. We don't have a good relationship with Iran. So we started a social media campaign. I remember my wife Anna was involved with that campaign, the Tweet for Youssef campaign, coming up with a hashtag that could be used around the world to tweet for this imprisoned pastor who was facing death. At any moment, they can execute you in Iran when you've got a death sentence hanging over your head. So ultimately, after a lot of pressure, I mean, a lot of pressure, spending over 1,000 days in prison, he gets freed after being arrested in 2009 in 2012, in the fall. And I remember actually where I was in Christmas Day 2012. I was on the West Coast in Portland, Oregon, celebrating Christmas with my wife's family. And I remember he was rearrested. I went right into the studios in Fox News for Fox News and other media outlets on that Christmas Day to advocate for, again, the release of Pastor Nader Khani and to make sure people knew that Iran looked like they did the right thing, and then quickly hoped the world wasn't watching. We were watching, and rearrested him. Now, he spent another 14 days in prison, but he was released again. It's been relatively calm since then in 2012, but it was really why the ACLJ and the ECLJ and our international affiliates now do so much work on a specific individual cases of Christian persecution and imprisoned Christians. We realized then we had an ability to get things done and to really save people's lives if we were willing to fight the battles and you were willing to fight the battles with us. Well, there is now, again, as Iran cracks down once again on Christians, Pastor Youssef was rearrested back in July of 2018. We discussed that, but just to give you an update on this, after Iranian agents raided his home and beat him. That is the norm in Iran. But now, this is the update today, he's been sentenced to 10 years in a horrific prison with 2 years of internal exile, which I think is like some area they send you to, for, quote, this is his crime. This time it's not even apostasy, which is a more serious crime under Islam. This is an actual crime in Iran, quote, promoting Christianity. 10 years in prison, and they're horrible prisons there, and 2 years of internal exile for, quote, promoting Christianity. And this is the nation that the Obama administration did the nuclear deal with. We at the ECLJ were on this once again, fighting for Pastor Youssef Nader Khani's release now that his sentence has been handed down. And we went to the UN just last week. There's a lot of work going on there at the ECLJ and ACLJ teams together. We are recognized by the UN, so we're able to make oral interventions at the United Nations in Geneva. And this was done at the Human Rights Council on behalf of Youssef Nader Khani. Take a listen to our ECLJ team.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the Islamic Republic of Iran, Pastor Youssef Nader Khani has been repeatedly targeted, arrested, and imprisoned because of his Christian faith. He was first arrested in 2006 and charged with apostasy and evangelism, then again in 2009 when he criticized the monopoly Islamic authorities had on education in Iran. He was found guilty and sentenced to death by hanging. And although he was acquitted and released in September of 2012, 3 months later he was arrested again on Christmas Day. He was arrested yet again in May of 2016 and subsequently found guilty of Zionism and evangelism. After being notified his appeal had been denied in May of 2018, Pastor Youssef was arrested and imprisoned 2 months later without any prior notice. It's reported that the police shattered Pastor Youssef's door, raided his home, and used electrical batons to beat Pastor Youssef and his son, all in front of Pastor Youssef's wife and other children. These heinous actions cannot be tolerated. Iran is a member of the United Nations, and as such, they have a responsibility to adhere to the principles set forth in the UN Charter. Through repeatedly and unlawfully detaining Pastor Youssef because of his religious faith, Iran is violating foundational principles of the Charter. This Council must stand against this grave injustice and demand Pastor Youssef's immediate release. I thank you.
That was Christoph from our European Center for Law and Justice team, who did a great job making that oral intervention. That's what they're called. When he's speaking there, and I think you could see it if you're on Facebook and Periscope. Maybe we could show a picture on behind me here for, I guess, Facebook and Periscope could see it. But if you're on radio, you're speaking to the entire UN Human Rights Council. That's all the ambassadors that are there and their staffs that are there. And it's not just the 47 members that come up. Almost every country is represented when the Human Rights Council is in session. Though the U.S. is no longer a part of it because it's so anti-Israel, it's where you've got to make these cases for human rights and to put these countries on the record. A great job by Christoph, and just an example of how we don't stop fighting these cases just because back in 2012 there was a good resolution to it in September, because then on Christmas Day we went right back to work. I mean, I was in the studios in Portland, Oregon, linking up with Fox News on Christmas Day to deliver this update about Pastor Youssef Nader Khani being rearrested, and then he was ultimately released 14 days later. Again, it was, at the time, our largest petition, 266,000 people. I now know we've had petitions over, have we had petitions over a million? Yeah, we've had petitions over a million. But at the time, it was one of our largest petitions. That was just back in 2012, which it sounds not that long ago, but is nearly as 7 years ago. And now, Than, we're back on it again. I think that's what's important for our audience to know as we go into this next break, is that we don't, until these folks have ultimate freedom, and if they live in a place like Iran, that may never happen, we will not abandon them as they are being treated this way.
Yeah, in a case like Youssef Nader Khani's, is going to take sustained effort, Jordan. And look, I think you're right that it was one of the cases that first showed the power of public advocacy. 250,000 people signing that petition, millions reached by the tweet for Youssef. But Jordan, I'm glad you played the sound from the Human Rights Council, because I think it shows that our involvement there is more important than ever. The United States had to make a move to step away from the council, and I think it was the correct move. But it did leave a void at the council, and it's a void that we are able to fill, not just on behalf of Pastor Nader Khani, as we were able to do, but on behalf of Pastor Saw, which we played that sound on this broadcast previously. These cases, Jordan, take sustained effort, and our ability to engage them at the United Nations and around the world, I really do think it's critical for shining light on darkness and making sure that regimes don't get away with these atrocities.
And we can't do it without your financial support, folks. We have a matching challenge right now. It's why we can continue to fight, have that office in Europe fighting for Pastor Nader Khani, bring that message to you for years fighting for his freedom in Iran. Be part of the matching challenge. Donate today at aclj.org, and your donation is doubled.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. Thank you for allowing me to give you that update on Pastor Youssef Nadarkhani. I know we were talking primarily about this victory at the Supreme Court by the Trump administration on immigration, a great victory for ICE, for securing our country. We've got a lot of phone calls on that. And I promise all of you hanging on the line right now, we're about to start taking those calls. But I wanted to update, you know, we have a long audience here, been on the airwaves for decades. And they got involved in that for the first time when we represented an individual Christian who was imprisoned in a foreign country facing the death sentence. And we took it on as our mission to see that they would be freed. And we used the social media campaign, you know, Tweet for Youssef. We used pressure at the United Nations. It was the largest petition we had ever done at the time. It brought together a whole host of people from different backgrounds, not all Christians, but freedom-seeking, freedom-loving people. But it brought, again, not all conservatives together, but just people who realized what was happening to this pastor was horrific. And then when he was ultimately released in 2012, in September, it was a great victory. But then he got re-arrested. I mean, this is so Iran, on Christmas Day of 2012, and we went right back to the airways, right back on television. I remember going right into the studio. I was in Portland, Oregon, celebrating Christmas with my wife's family there, and I went right back into the studios on Christmas Day and the day after because of his rearrest, and ultimately he got out. Now he's been rearrested, and as we told you in the last segment of the broadcast, we're working because he's now been sentenced to 10 years for promoting Christianity. That's the actual crime. 10 years for promoting Christianity. Find out more about his case at ACLJ.org. We're going to keep you updated about it. We've already been at the UN, as you just heard or saw, if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, making that oral intervention, putting Iran on the record and the UN on the record that Youssef Nadarkhani has again been rearrested, imprisoned, now faces 10 years in prison plus 2 years of exile for, quote, promoting Christianity. And we'll continue to update you on that case. But again, it was the first time we had taken on one of those, used social media that way, and ultimately, you know, saw his release from death row. You know, it was a very high, again, tense time because at any moment he could be could have been executed in Iran. So I thank you for letting me give you that update on that because there are a lot of our supporters listening to this broadcast who remember that time, who signed those tweets. In fact, if you did, if you want to talk to us on air, I'd love to hear from you, 1-800-684-3110. If you've been with us and signed in those tweets, and remember, that was really the beginning. And now we kind of speed up to the Brunsons, to the Saeed Abedinis, to the Pastor Saw imprisoned in China right now. Again, give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. It's a great time. Again, it just reminds you about the work that we do at the ACLJ. It's so broad, whether here in the U.S. fighting for our border security and our security, national security, or overseas for a persecuted Christian facing death. It's a great time to support the work. It is the month of March, and this is our first matching challenge month. What that means is whatever you donate online at ACLJ.org is effectively doubled. You go to ACLJ.org, you'll see matching challenge. You donate online. So if you choose, let's say, to donate $30, that's what you're charged on your credit card. But during a matching month, we have donors who say, I will match whatever donations you receive. So because of your $30 donation, we've got people ready that will then donate an additional $30. So that means because of your action of donating $30 of your hard-earned money, that's all you're charged, by the way, we actually receive $60 at the ACLJ. It's a great time to support our work, ACLJ.org. We get back, we go right to your phone calls on the immigration victory, on a lot of the immigration issues facing our country, on the Supreme Court victory, by the Trump administration, on what's happening next to in the political realm as well. We're going to get right to your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. I would like to hear from people who maybe were involved in that Tweet for Youssef campaign, that initial campaign to free a Christian pastor in Iran who was facing a death row. And now looking forward about how many of these cases we have handled successfully, and we still got ongoing cases right now like Pastor Saws and some we don't even talk about on the air. Support the work of the ACLJ. Donate online right now at ACLJ.org. Be part of our matching challenge, and your donation is doubled. Double the impact of your donation. Great time to support the work of the ACLJ.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We talked about a lot already today. And if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, share this with your friends and family. I'm saying it even while we're on the air with 1,000-plus radio stations listening. People listen all over the world. But this is a great time to share the broadcast. We just updated you, unfortunately, on Pastor Youssef Nadarkhani being re-sentenced, re-imprisoned in Iran for 10 years for, quote, promoting Christianity. That is his crime. We've already engaged at the UN. We will continue to fight for his release. And I asked people if you remember being involved in that Tweet for Youssef and the release, and remember your church being involved in those Tweet for Youssef campaigns when he was on death row in 2012, give us a call. I'd love to hear from you at 1-800-684-3110. But I did want to focus in on a lot of this big immigration victory at the Supreme Court. I want to go in order. People have been holding on. So let's go to Patrick in Virginia on line three. Patrick, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I guess my question is kind of two part, because it involves states' rights and then it involves federal courts. Our founders in the Constitution gave most of the power to the states, which I think was a great idea. But 200 years later, and 40 years after the Saul Alinsky plan has been, death by 1,000 cuts has been working, now we have states that are just basically obstructing anything this administration tries to do. And it seems like they're just trying to slow roll everything until hopefully, they get a different president in the next administration. What can we do to, I know federal law supersedes many of these things, but what can we do to enforce it when you have a state that's, firmly trying not to let anything happen?
Yeah.
And then the issue of the Ninth Circuit Court.
Yeah.
Is there any remedy to...
There's been discussed some remedies. One is there's always vacancies, Stan, that need to be filled, a number of which are, I think there's three right now at the Ninth Circuit that have nominees ready to be confirmed for those vacancies. You can correct me if that number is not exactly right, but I think it's somewhere around three or four. Maybe it was three who are waiting their hearing, one who's already had the hearing but not the vote yet for the Ninth Circuit. There's been ideas about that the circuit is so large anyways because it encompasses California that it should be split, and that would, again, maybe lessen the impact of it. But ultimately, what is unfortunate about it is that circuit courts are supposed to really be the courts of last resort for most cases. 99.9%, they are the highest court. It's the Supreme Court is supposed to only have to handle a small a small portion of the cases in the U.S. Because it's only one court with nine justices, where there's splits and a lot of confusion on a constitutional issue in a complicated case. There needs to be something that the whole country has to follow. It's a reason they take is that it needs to be nationwide in how it is a law is interpreted and followed, even at the state level. But Than, ultimately here, what we see is every time, whether it is Democrat state officials, governors and attorney generals who don't want to enforce immigration laws, or they want to file against immigration laws, or the federally elected officials in the Senate and the House, especially those presidential candidates, they are just unwilling. They don't want to compromise on anything. They don't want to hand what could even be perceived as any kind of victory to President Trump.
I think that's correct, Jordan. I mean, I would start by telling you that I don't think the conflict on this area is as stark as some have made it out to be. I mean, you do have to carefully consider what is given to each branch. First of all, in Article 1, Congress clearly has the ability to determine classes of immigration that are eligible to enter the country. That's the power that President Obama tried to take over. But the Article 2 powers to enforce those laws are pretty clear, and they're pretty strong on the federal level, Jordan. Now, yes, they do require some cooperation with state law enforcement, and we have seen that conflict between ICE and then federal states and localities that have tried to be a sanctuary jurisdiction. So there's been a conflict there. But the enforcement of those laws and the deportation of criminals who are not legally present, that really is a federal power, Jordan. So I don't think the conflict from the states is as stark as the other side has made it out to be. But I would tell you this, you are correct that this has played out almost entirely in the Ninth Circuit by design from the left. When they challenge these laws, they pick a district inside the Ninth Circuit so that they can ultimately end up at the Ninth Circuit. But that does not have to always be the case. You don't even have to reform the Ninth Circuit, although I think there are some reforms that are probably a good idea. But you don't have to reform them, Jordan. You just have to fill the vacancies, as you pointed out. You mentioned the three that are awaiting action from the Judiciary Committee, and there is one additional on the floor of the Senate. So all told, you could have four additional seats in the Ninth Circuit filled by President Trump's nominees. He's already made the nominations. The Senate just needs to confirm them. Jordan, if they would do that, that would mean that seven judges sitting on the Ninth Circuit are nominations sent forward by President Donald Trump. That would do a lot to sort of right this wrong of lawfare that the left has engaged on, specifically as it relates to border security. They've done it on other issues as well, Jordan. But on this issue of border security, the Ninth Circuit has been an impediment to President Trump's priorities. And frankly, I think the United States Senate has a big obligation to do to correct that wrong.
Back to the phones we go. Chris in Nevada on line six. Chris, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi. As frustrating and almost mind-boggling as it is when the ACLU files these lawsuits, I actually love it because ultimately they shoot themselves in the foot when the Supreme Court rules as it did yesterday and sets some great precedent, because the ACLU has hurt this country enough.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the ACLU attorney has kind of acknowledged that in this case out of the Supreme Court that was on Tuesday, 5-4 victory for the Trump administration and for ICE. Just let me re-explain it to people. The decision was 5-4. It's along completely ideological lines. And what it does is it allows, very simply, reversing the Ninth Circuit, that there can be mandatory detention when necessary after a immigrant comes to the U.S., even if they come legally with a visa, if they are charged with a crime, and then convicted of that crime and serve prison sentence in the U.S., when they are done with that prison sentence, what should happen to them? Well, under the ICE rules, ICE should then take them from the prison when they're done with their time at prison, detain them until they are deported, because they have lost the right to be in the United States because of the crime that they were convicted of, not accused of, convicted of, and already served time for. They should not just be released out into the streets until ICE has to go then and figure out how to find them and pick them up. But it does go along the line, Than. So far, the challenges to the Trump administration when it comes to immigration, illegal immigration, issues like ICE. So we see ICE. We see we saw the victory with the so-called travel ban. Now with that power being utilized, And what we'll see, we saw two victories there at the Supreme Court. And what we'll see likely next involving this issue of border security is going to be the national emergency issue.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. It's all been part of the lawfare effort on the part of the left to combat President Trump, not on merits, not on law, but on jurisdiction, on making sure that you put the case in front of a judge that is friendly to your point of view rather than the statute that underlies it. Jordan, I would go back to a political point on this, and I mean political in a good sense. The American people, Jordan, very clearly want this kind of enforcement. I mean, that was one of the main messages that President Trump ran on, is that I am going to enforce our border, I'm going to enforce our immigration laws, and I am going to make sure that violent criminals are not allowed to stay illegally present. And again, it has been couched as looking to try to round people up to deport them. Jordan, that is not what this is, and the White House has made this clear time and time again. This is not an effort to round people up. It is an effort to make sure that people that have abused our immigration laws and then have committed crimes once they are here. So on top of the crime of being illegally present, people that have been convicted and served time for a crime, in many cases, Jordan, violent crimes. Those are the people that are legally present that this administration has said that they are going to focus on. It's what President Trump ran on. And Jordan, across ideological lines, the American people, they want that kind of enforcement.
Yeah, they're not being going around rounding people up. These people have already been apprehended for a separate crime, not an immigration crime. And because of that crime, they've lost their right to be here. They've lost their right to their visa that they were granted. And they were because they were convicted. So they had due process. They were convicted of the crime. That means they lose their visa. So they were already under detention by the U.S. Some of them had to serve prison sentences. They've already been detained. They weren't rounded up because of immigration issues. And then what ICE is saying is, okay, after that is handled, if they are convicted, so that their visa then is revoked, because that's part of the rules with getting legal visas to the U.S. is not being convicted of crimes while you're here, or you lose the visa, you get punished for that crime in the U.S., and then you can ultimately are deported. ICE says, listen, they're already under legal custody because they've been convicted of a crime. Now, hand them over to us so we can handle the deportation more effectively. So it's not something where we have to go round people up to find those who are here illegally. It's the opposite of having to round people up. Listen, final segment's coming up. 1-800-684-3110. We will take all of your phone calls, any topic, politics, all these issues that have arisen this week at the Supreme Court with immigration. Again, you've got the political issues like the Electoral College, the issues like court packing, which I know we got into yesterday, and also Youssef Nadarkhani's case. I'd love to hear about those of you who are involved. 1-800-684-3110. Give us a call for our final segment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
All right, in our final segment, we've covered a lot today. And you still have time to call. We've got some calls ready to go. But and Mike and Tracy, we're about to get to your calls. You still have time if you want to call and be on the air, 1-800-684-3110, to comment on the Supreme Court case empowering ICE. The fact that we even had to, again, the Trump administration had to fight that case. Of course, it came out of the Ninth Circuit. They were fighting the ACLU. They won, but along 5-4 lines. I mean, that's how the margins of these cases, just like the travel ban case, national emergency case, shouldn't be like that either if it gets to the Supreme Court, but could end up being kind of that partisan line as well, which is unfortunate for the Supreme Court. You know, we talked this week also about this Electoral College issue and the states in running around a constitutional amendment. We've talked about Pastor Youssef Nader Khani. I've really wanted to hear from people who are involved in that effort. Give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. We've talked about the court packing as well. The liberals wanting to change the Supreme Court if they win the presidency in 2020. That tells you when they're being real serious. Only if they win. Only if they beat Donald Trump. If they don't, well, hey, they'll handle the next vacancies, so we don't need to do any court packing. But if we win, if we don't win, which tells you something. They think that they have a really tough time against President Trump, and I agree with them, that they need to do some kind of court packing. Let me go to Than Bennett, though, with one of his favorite topics of the year, and that's March Madness has officially kicked off. The first game is... I think it's the is it the first half of the first game right now, Minnesota and Louisville?
Louisville, yep. It may be on in the studio, Jordan. It's possible.
Okay,
I can't confirm or deny.
I will tell you I've got Minnesota in this game. Who do you have?
Yeah, I've got Louisville.
What's the score? What is the score?
Yeah, I think Minnesota's up by about 4 or 5 points, but there's still time to play, Jordan, so we're going to be okay.
Yeah, this is just first half.
Yeah, just first half.
Yeah, first game of March Madness. So yeah, and then I've got to put you on the spot right here because it's all public now. You know, we have these pools, the ACLJ. Yeah. Who do you believe is going to be the national champion?
Well, I don't think this year you can go in any direction, unfortunately, Jordan, but Duke. I mean, Zion Williamson there is a generational talent. I had to pick them. They are my national champion. But I will tell you this. I'm most interested in a game this afternoon where my hometown Bradley Braves take on the Michigan State Spartans. So that's the game I'll be looking at. And I'll tell you this, Jordan. As much as I would like to beat you in our office challenge, I'm actually more interested in finishing higher in the standings than your wife because when I don't, Jordan, I'm telling you, I'd never stop hearing about it. So I've got to finish ahead of Anna. That's my main goal.
I will tell you, she takes it seriously. She spent time last night where she was in a different room. Say, I'm doing my research right now on my bracket. I mean, she's doing some serious research. I think she's with you on this first game with Louisville. But I'm in agreement with you. I've got Duke. Again, I think that, again, with Zion and that whole team, it's just hard not to pick Duke, almost impossible not to pick Duke this year, so long as they stay injury-free through the run-up. So, again, a little March Madness update for you because you got to have a little fun when you're talking about such serious issues. Will, our producer, says that Auburn will win it all. I mean, I wonder what the odds are. Put down like maybe a $100 bet. Could be pretty good odds. Maybe worthwhile. I mean, you never know. Pretty difficult road ahead for them, I think, Will. But you stand with, faithful to your school, and we can appreciate that. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. We'll get a little bit more serious again. Mike's been holding on. Mike, we appreciate you holding on from Illinois. Let's make sure we get Mike a signed copy of our book as well. Hey, Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. So I have no doubt, I believe, there definitely is a national emergency as far as the immigration issue. I think President Trump seems to be in full compliance with the law as it's constructed. My question is, I don't think there's a doubt about that, is the law itself constitutional? Because it seems there may be an issue that Congress is ceding power that they don't have the authority to cede that power. So I wanted your opinion on that.
I think on the National Emergencies Act, listen, it's been litigated. It was back in 1976, and Than, it was actually Congress saw the Constitution and the way the Constitution had been interpreted by the executive branch as too broad. They thought that the presidential power was too broad when it came to declaring a national emergencies and kind of acting outside of Congress. So they passed the law in 1976 to actually try and kind of weaken the president's power to do this and define it more directly, what the president's national emergency power was, that has been understood that exists within the Constitution. So they actually did this not to delegate over, but to try and take power from the president.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think there's a policy argument that might lie against narrowing the 1976 Act so that some of the previous declarations that we've seen, Jordan, that probably weren't true national emergencies would fall outside the scope. But that's a policy argument, not a constitutional one. And to be honest with you, I don't even hear much of a constitutional argument from Washington, D.C., even on the left. I hear plenty of arguments from both Republicans and Democrats that they would like to either narrow the scope of the 76 Act or maybe they would not like to change the mechanism for turning it off. And by the way, Jordan, even that mechanism for how to turn off a national emergency, that has been litigated before the Supreme Court as well. And the Supreme Court actually was the one that told Congress, look, in order to honor this separation of powers, it has to be a vehicle that the president can veto. And then you will have to override that veto if you want to turn off the national emergency. So even the mechanism that we're going through right now, the Supreme Court has already ruled on that. And they have said, if you want to check the president's power, you're going to have to override a veto. And that's currently where we are, Jordan. The House will take up that veto override vote next Tuesday. And quite honestly, they're going to fall far short.
I mean, they were already 40 votes short. Why do they? Is it just because of the liberal base again? I mean, because they were 40 votes short. It just seems like a big failure.
I agree. They could meet their constitutional obligation to reconsider that veto by simply laying it on the table and not casting a vote. Speaker Pelosi has decided she's going to take the vote. Jordan, the only thing I can think of is one of two things. Either the pressure inside her base, inside her caucus, is so steep she thinks she has to, or maybe, Jordan, against all odds, she continues to think this is a winning issue for them politically. I don't see that as being the case, but maybe she does.
Let's go to Pam calling in from California online, too, with a great question. Pam, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Jordan. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering if maybe you could give a little brief civics lesson about the number of Supreme Court justices. Many people think that that is governed by the Constitution, mm-hmm. when in fact the number of justices was set forth in a law that dates back to 1789, which was subsequently amended to I think it went from 6 up to 9.
Right.
So to court tax, it wouldn't require a constitutional amendment. It would actually require
That's right. It's not as difficult. It's not like you have to amend the Constitution to change the makeup of the Supreme Court. I mean, it's the Constitution gives a lot of power to Congress here. All it says is there has to be a Supreme Court. And then whatever inferior courts, I'll read, it's Article 3, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges, both of the Supreme and inferior courts, shall hold their offices during good behavior and shall at stated times receive service, compensation not be diminished. Again, Than, Congress really does have the ability to act. Now, you have the presidential veto. But again, it's a major, some of these restructurings they're talking about may have constitutional issues because of the lifetime appointment issue. They want to get away from that. Yeah. So that may be an issue that the Constitution does require amending the Constitution. But on adding numbers to court, it's just up to Congress.
Yeah, the constitutional threshold is not very high there. And Jordan, I know we're at the end of the broadcast, but it's not very high on abandoning the Electoral College either. That authority mostly rests inside state legislatures. So that could be real as well.
All right, folks, this is, again, it's been a great discussion. A lot of topics discussed. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Be part of our matching challenge. Donate today at aclj.org. Double the impact of your donation. We need your support.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.